Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion.
Liz Elting, welcome to Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. We're so excited to have you and to help us understand about your foundation and all the great work. We have three women with us that are rising seniors. They're going to graduate from undergrad business school, and I'm going to have them introduce themselves, and they each have one question for you, which I think is perfect because they did a great job at setting the stage. And I'd like them to introduce themselves and what school they're from. And we're going to start with Taylor.
Hi, I'm Taylor Thies, and I attend Elon University in North Carolina. So my question is, what drew you to be an entrepreneur? And did you know what you wanted to do at a young age?
Okay, well, hi, Laurel, and hi, Taylor. So great to be here with all of you. So as far as always about knowing about whether I wanted to be an entrepreneur, if I always knew that, I'm sorry, was that the question?
Yes, like what drew you to be an entrepreneur, and like if you knew this at a young age or if you figured it out later on?
Sure. So I actually did not know it at a young age. It really related to the experiences I had along the way. In a nutshell, I had lived in five countries by the time I was 21. I studied four languages, so I knew I loved languages, but did not know what I wanted to do with them. I ended up getting a job after college at the world's at a translation company, which at the time was the world's largest, but it was a relatively small company. It was 90 people. I learned a tremendous amount. I determined I loved the industry, but I thought it could be done better with better service and better quality. So I then went to business school and didn't think I would be an entrepreneur at that point. I just kind of had my experience at the other company. I had ideas on how it could be done better, but I thought I would go and get a job and learn on another company's time. In a nutshell, I tried out finance very briefly, a total of 6 weeks, determined it wasn't for me. And then I left that job right after business school and decided now is the time. I love the language industry. I know, I believe it can be done better. I think I will follow my heart, follow my passion, and start a translation company. So I didn't know until my time at the other company and after briefly trying out finance and determining both the industry and the environment were not for me.
I'm going to dig into that a little bit. I'd love to hear the story because I've read the story online, but the founding story of TransPerfect. How did that come about? We always like to hear the birth story of a business.
So I did my junior year in Spain. I then worked in Venezuela shortly after college. And then I got a job at this other translation company, which was the perfect way to combine business and language. People would always say to me, oh, are you going to be a teacher? Are you going to be a professor? Because I was a language major. But I found the perfect opportunity. But as I mentioned, I felt like it could be done better. I saw things that were wrong at the other company or could be improved. So there I was with these ideas. I left that company. I went back to school to get my MBA. And then I thought I had to try out finance, which, you know, I'm sure you all know a lot of people who are going into finance. But NYU Business School MBA, at that time, 70% of the people were finance majors. So I thought, wow, there must be something terrific about this. I'll get a job in investment banking. It's very exciting. It's very lucrative. It's very sexy. And I thought I would try it. And as I mentioned, I got a job at doing equity arbitrage is what I was doing. It was in the proprietary trading division of a French bank. And I didn't really like the work. It was a lot of number crunching. It wasn't for me. And then the other piece of it was I was the only woman professional there. It was me and a bunch of men. And whenever the phone rang, people would yell, Liz, phone, as though I was the one to get it, even though I was hired as an MBA who was supposed to be doing equity arbitrage. There was a lot of yelling, swearing around the office, just very much a boys' club that I couldn't relate to. So I thought, you know, there's no time like the present. And what I did is I ended up calling a few people I had worked with at the other company, translators. And I said, what do you think of the industry? Do you think this is a good time to do this? And then I also thought it was the beginning, or I knew it was the beginning of the globalization of business. This was in 1992, and it was the beginning of the globalization of business. So I thought, I'll try this out. And I was living in an NYU dorm room at the time. It was a few months after I'd graduated. It was actually in the middle of a recession. And I thought, I don't have a lot to lose. I'm used to living like a student, not having money, not spending money, not a lot to lose. May as well do this now. I know the industry and I love the industry. And the goal really from that dorm room was to become the to build the world's largest translation company, or what later became the largest language solutions company.
And you achieved your vision, which is so exciting. Speaking of the boys club, I think June's question relates to that. So I'm going to have June ask the next question.
Yes, hi, Liz. My name is June. I'm from the June Liu from the University of Denver. And then my question is, throughout your career, how do you overcome rejection or unfair treatment at work?
How do you overcome rejection
or unfair treatment at work?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a great question. Nice to meet you, June. I think you just need to not take things personally, because, you know, I think a lot of us, most of us, are sensitive, and we want to be somewhere where we'll be treated well, and people should treat one another well. But in business, that's not always how it works. Certainly, we've all worked in places and been a part of places where people treat us badly, and I think we just have to not take it personally. I guess it's helpful to find a job where the core values involve treating people well, whether one of the core values is kindness or respect or compassion. But then once you're at that job, doing what you can to make sure the value, people actually live by the values of the company, if that's one of the values. But then when people mistreat us, just not to take it personally. And then of course, when we give feedback, not make it personal.
And I would also add, I appreciate your story about leaving an environment that didn't work for you, right? Because that's also a good strategy.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. There's plenty of unkind treatment in companies, in the world, in politics, you know, in Hollywood, and in everything. And in my case, was it unkind treatment? Not necessarily unkind, just a treatment I didn't feel comfortable with. Was it sexist? Probably, you know, and I thought, I can't change what's here. I'm a junior employee, right? I'm entry-level employee, but I can go create my own environment where people are treated well. And that was a big part of why I wanted to start TransPerfect. And one of the other things I saw TransPerfect, or I wanted to do with TransPerfect, was I wanted it to have an amazing culture where people really treated one another well. Because what I found at my other company, the translation company I was at between college and grad school, is there was always production versus sales, sales versus production. And I know that's common in all businesses, but I thought, what would happen if we could create a company where production and sales were on the same team? They treated one another well, they were motivated by the same things. That could be a really wonderful company. And so I thought, I'm going to do that, and also create a company where the culture is great all around and women are treated as well as men. And, you know, I didn't do all of the things I could have done in retrospect as far as the whole, all of those issues. And I learned a lot during my time, but I think the point is leaving the company and finding a place where people are treated better, or being an entrepreneur and creating your own company.
Yeah, I really appreciate that you're an advocate of, even during these difficult times, for people to start companies. So could you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. In fact, it's often the best time to start a company can be during a recession, or during, you know, when the economy is tough. That was the case with me. It's not the ideal time to find a job. You can kind of come in there with an idea, a novel idea, of course, an idea where you're solving a problem, doing it better than the competition. Maybe come in with a very competitive price, a better price, not a lot of overhead. And that's good, because there's a need for your product or service, people do not want to pay a lot, you do not have the overhead, and you may as well take a risk when the market is not so good to get a job, number one, and customers do not necessarily want to pay as much. You come in low, you can raise your prices over time after you've developed revenue, established a reputation. So I'm very much a proponent of people starting their own businesses and creating the environment that they would like to see, and also being in charge of their own destiny. So I think now is a wonderful time to do that.
Shift now into your current venture, your foundation. Jessica has a question about that.
Hi, Liz. I go to University of Denver with June. And my question is, of all the causes you could have chosen for your foundation, what led you to focus on equality?
I did encounter issues with sexism during my years in the business world. When I went to Stern, to NYU Business School, there was something called SWIB, Stern Women in Business. And I was maybe naive. I didn't even think to join it. I mean, in retrospect, I certainly should have, but I didn't think of there could be sexism. I always thought, you know, it's about performance. It's about results. So you do the right thing and you will be rewarded and you will be treated well. And then I found, you know, whether it was at the proprietary trading division of that French bank where I worked briefly, where I felt like I as a woman would be treated differently, or even with my business partner who was a man, people often assumed when they saw the two of us, when they met the two of us, that he was the CEO and I was the assistant, even, you know, when we were tiny, even though I was actually the one with the experience and the idea. Then I saw how women were treated and that I couldn't control everything, whether it was at my own company, whether it was with clients. So I saw it. I saw issues. And then, of course, what was going on in the world as a whole. And I saw, you know, there's a lot more to be done as far as women being treated equally in business. And then, as I mentioned, in politics, in entertainment. And I think, you know, economic power is social power, and social power is political power, and it all goes together, and we need to have our place. And women, of course, do deserve to be treated equally, number one, and business and the world is a better place when they are. So I'm mentioning women a lot, but other marginalized populations as well. There's so much work to be done, but when you feel like you're fortunate, or I felt like I was fortunate to be in the situation I am now, it's my obligation and my pleasure to try to help, you know, both women and other people who are not born with the same advantages or be in a position to help people.
So I've read about your beautiful foundation and its mission, and I'm curious if it's changed at all, or your activities have changed at all since sheltering in place and COVID and everything that's happened in 2020.
Yeah, they have. So in a nutshell, what I was doing is I was involved in and have been involved in NYU Business School. I've been on the board and I do a number of things as far as women at NYU Business School. Trinity College, I'm also on the board. I do a number of things as far as women there. Also speak at Columbia Business School and mentor women there. And then was very involved in National Organization for Women and American Heart Association and IWMF. That's where I was. But your question is, how has it changed? I started something called the HALO Fund, which basically is focused on COVID-19 relief. And I was trying to figure out what part of that do I want to address, because obviously there's the whole medical piece of it, and there's plenty to do there. And I've done a little bit of that through American Heart Association, through AHA. I donated money for COVID-19 relief, but then also I did something else with them, which is helping a women's shelter in Harlem. And what that does is it helps women and the people who work there become educated about COVID-19 relief. It also, like, it gives them training. Then the women who are there provides blood pressure cuffs, thermometers. Also did a little more with the Campaign Against Hunger in Bed-Stuy. They service Brooklyn and other areas of New York City, because with COVID-19, there have been major issues with people not being able to afford food, or having to be brought food. Also got involved in something called Rescuing Leftover Cuisine, which was really interesting. I didn't know about it until I learned about it recently. And they take leftover food from restaurants in New York City and they provide it to people in need. And actually they'll take it to, they are taking it to a place like the Campaign Against Hunger in Brooklyn and then distributing it. So these are some of the things the HALO Fund is doing. And then finally, last major thing I've done through the HALO Fund is the Social Impact Fund, which basically invests in socially responsible businesses. And that will ultimately help these people in zip codes where they are not given proper food, healthcare, places to live, etc. So I'm doing a number of things.
You're a wizard, yeah. And I'm so impressed with everything you're doing, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Oh, sure.
I'm curious, just from a practical standpoint, what is the best thing about running your foundation, and what is the hardest thing?
Well, I think the best thing is it's great to try to make a difference. It's great to spend my time on things that I think could be making an impact. You know, sometimes when you're in business over time, I mean, that you're making an impact in some ways, right? We all do with whatever we're doing, and we know which things we think are more meaningful and impactful than others. But sometimes you're spending your day on things that you feel like, okay, I'm not sure how much this is really going to change the world for the better. And that's the great thing, I think, about being involved in philanthropy and being involved in a foundation, is being involved in things that I think are impactful and are going to make the world, hopefully make the world a better place. So I find that incredibly rewarding.
And what's the hardest thing about it?
Yeah, I guess it's figuring out the best ways to spend your time, or spend my time, because we all can be busy, right? But we want to make sure we're doing it in the most useful and impactful way.
And do you have any tips for other women out there that are balancing all these things during sheltering in place?
Yeah, just, I think we all should, we should all do the best we can. It's not easy. I think, you know, what's hard for a lot of people is most people are in-person people. They like to see people in person. So I think we need to be good to ourselves. I think we should still try to, you know, practice self-compassion and do things that are important to us each day that make us happy. You know, I think exercise is an important thing because it's so easy to, since we can do everything from home and we pretty much need to do everything from home, I require myself to walk 5 miles every day. I must, no matter what. I mean, that's the minimum I have to do. And then I like to try to get exercise in other ways, but that's gravy. I have to get that 5 miles, or I feel like I haven't done what I must do for my happiness and my health. So I think that the physical activity is great. Doing something new, you know, taking advantage in some way that you wouldn't, you know, whether it's, I mean, in my case, I'm finally, like, I'm baking again. I'm baking desserts. I love that. I used to do that when I was younger, when I was in high school, and then I got busy with work and family and I stopped and trying new things and trying new recipes and trying to master a few. I think another is reaching out to people who need us, people in our lives who are alone, who are in their homes alone, whether it's our mother. I'm now talking, making sure I talk to my mother every day. I text her every morning, but I talk to her every day because she lives alone in Toronto. Reaching out to a friend or two every day, if you have the time. I think that's valuable too. I guess I'm a big phone person because we all have so many Zoom calls and, you know, something about looking at the screen day and night, we must take ourselves off it. The same way when we're in a work environment, I think you can't just be on the iPhone or the iPad or the computer 24/7. You have to take a break from the emails. Same with the Zoom call. So you can perhaps walk, you know, get exercise while you're doing it. So those are some of the things
those are great.
I would recommend during this time.
I'm well aware of how much you get done in a day. So I knew you would have some good tips. So that's awesome. Is there anything that you're up to or have plans for the future that you'd like to share with our readers or listeners? Anything you want to promote or shine a light on?
Well, I mean, I guess in general, I think, you know, it's, I'm just trying to, as I said, trying to figure out the best use of my time and how to make the biggest impact. I think we all should just be looking for ways that we can be leaders and change the problems we see in the world. You know, I'm not sure what's next for me personally, but, you know, I guess that relates to that last thing I was talking about, try to be the change you want to see in the world. I mean, obviously that's a cliche, but really looking for ways to make the world a better place. As far as what I'm doing next related to that, I can't tell you exactly because I'm not
you're
sure.
You're doing enough, but I'd love for you to share your website where people can get involved with all your wonderful work.
Yeah, it's thank you. It's ElizabethElchingFoundation.org. But awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And we'll put that everywhere. I'd like to wrap up with, since you have such great tips, Liz, anything you want to share with our audience or readers or with these young women that are with us, any tips or lessons, maybe things that you wish you knew when you were 22?
Oh, gosh, so many. Well, I think it really... I mean, I want to come up with something novel, but okay. One thing is I think it's so critical to follow your passion because, as I told you, I tried not doing that and that didn't work out. So then I did go back to my passion. So I think the follow your passion is so critical. I think most people in the end still don't lead. I mean, I've seen firsthand, often you have the very tough people in the world, maybe you could call them bullies or sociopaths or whatever you want to call them. They're out there. We see them and then you have a whole huge group who may follow them because it's easier, because they have power, maybe because they're a little entertaining, maybe just because they're fearful, they're afraid if they don't. And then I think you have a small group. They're not the sociopaths, they're not followers. They're like, neither of this is right. This doesn't feel right. And they're the ones saying, no, I'm going to be different. I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to practice integrity. I'm going to practice kindness. And I'm going to go out and solve problems. And I'm going to lead. And I feel like we need more people in that third group. So, you know, I think it's important to be part of that third group. So I'd say that. But, you know, I think being persistent, not quitting, is critical. I think working hard is an important piece of it. I think it's hard to achieve the success you want to without hard work. And then, you know, being positive and looking for solutions and being grateful. So those are some of my thoughts.
Liz Elting, you are amazing. We are so grateful for your time today. Please go to ElizabethElchingFoundation.org to learn more about her and her wonderful causes. If you want to learn more about us, go to CompassionateLeadersCircle.com or go to Forbes.com and look at Compassionate Leadership, and there'll be a post there about Liz Elting and all of her wisdom. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Laurel. I greatly appreciate it. Thanks so much to all of you.
Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders Podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.